There were too many trollocs, with more crossing the walls all the while, and she could not neglect the important weave, even spinning as quickly as she could. There had to be a way. She would not fail. Somehow the thought of being killed and eaten by trollocs never entered into it. She would not fail. That was the whole. Abruptly the way came to her, and she smiled and began to hum the quickest court dance that she knew. Perhaps the way, a chance, in any case. The rapid steps took her around the rim of the star, without ever requiring her to lose sight of the weave she had to complete above all else. After all, however quickly her feet moved, what could be more serene than a court dance with her face properly smooth, as though she were dancing in the Sun Palace? She wove the five powers as fast as she could, faster than she had ever woven before, she was certain. In some way the dancing helped, and the intricate weave began to take shape like the finest Mardina lace. Dancing she wove, hurling fire with both hands, killing shadow spawn with both hands. Sometimes they came so close that their blood spattered her face, sometimes so close that she had to dance out of the way as they fell, dance away from their down-curving swords. But she ignored the blood and danced. The final weave fell into place and she let the whole thing evaporate, but there were still trollocs in the square. A quick step took her to the center of the star where she danced in a tiny circle, back to back with an imaginary partner. Working three separate weaves at once had left her exhausted, but she summoned the strength to manage three again. Dancing, she hurled fire and called lightning from the sky, harrowing the square with explosions. At last, nothing moved except for her, dancing. She circled three more times before she realized it and stopped. Stopped humming. There was an archway in the wall now, a shadowed opening with the star carved above it. Her heart turned to ice. An archway that led out to where the trollocs had come from. Into the blight. Only madmen entered the blight willingly. Gathering her rough skirts, she made herself cross that charnel square toward the gate. It was the way she had to go. Chapter 10. It finishes. 99 weaves. She found the six-pointed star laid out in round river stones amid the towering dunes of a desert where the heat made her light-headed and sucked the moisture from her skin before sweat had time to form. She found it drawn in the snow on a mountainside where gale winds beat at her and lightning struck all around, and in a great city of impossible towers where people babbled at her incomprehensibly. She found it in a night-shrouded forest, in a black-water swamp, in a marsh of tall grass that cut like knives, on farms and plains, in hovels and palaces. Sometimes she found it while she was clothed, but her clothing frequently vanished, and just as often she had none to begin. Sometimes she was suddenly bound with ropes or manacles, bent into contorted positions that twisted her joints, or hanging suspended by her wrists or ankles. She faced poisonous serpents and toothed water lizards three spans long, rampaging wild boars and hunting lions, hungry leopards and stampeding herds of wild cattle. She was stung by hornets and ground wasps, bitten by swarms of ants and horseflies and insects she did not recognize. Mobs carrying torches tried to drag her away for burning, white cloaks to hang her, robbers to stab her, footpads to strangle her. And every time she forgot, and wondered how she'd gotten a slash across her cheek, what had to be a sword cut along her ribs, three gouges down her back that must have come from claws, other wounds and injuries and bruises that left her bleeding, limping. And she was weary. Oh, so weary, down to the bone. More than channeling even 99 weaves could explain. Perhaps her wounds did. 99 weaves. Clutching her plain woolen skirts, she hobbled to the six-pointed star, marked out in red tiles beside a burbling marble fountain in a small garden surrounded by a colonnade of thin, fluted columns. She could barely stand, and maintaining a smooth face took her to the limits of her ability. Pain throbbed in every part of her. No, agony was a better description than pain. But this was the last. Once it was done, this would be done as well, whatever this was, and she would be free to seek healing, if she could find an Aes Sedai. Otherwise a reader would do. This was another of the useless weaves, producing only a shower of shining, colorful flecks, if woven correctly. Incorrectly woven, it would redden her skin painfully, as from a bad sunburn. She began very carefully. Her father walked out of the colonnade right in front of her, in a long coat of a style at least a year out of fashion, with bars of the House Damodred colors marching from his high collar down to below his knees. He was very tall for a Kyrianan man, just an inch short of 6 feet, with hair more gray than not, worn in a club at the nape of his neck. He had always stood straight as a blade, except when bending to let her leap into his arms as a child, but now his shoulders were slumped. She could not understand why the sight of him made her suddenly teary.
"Warain," he said, worry adding lines to his gentle face. "You must come with me immediately. It is your mother, child. She is dying. There is just time, if you come now."
It was too much. She wanted to weep. She wanted to rush off with him. She did neither. The weave seemed to complete itself in a sudden blur, and gaily glittering flecks fell around them. The display seemed especially bitter. She opened her mouth to ask where her mother was, and saw the second star behind him, worked in red tile above the colonnade, just where he had first appeared. A steady pace, without hesitation. "I love you, father," she said calmly. Light! How could she stay calm? But she must. "Please tell mother that I love her with all my heart." Brushing past him, she limped toward the second star. She thought he called after her, that he ran after and plucked at her sleeve, but her mind was a haze from the effort of keeping a smooth face and a steady tread. A stumble, really, but she neither hung back nor hurried. She stepped between the fluted columns beneath the star and found herself staggering into a round white chamber, the reflected light of stand lamps dazzling her eyes. Memory crashed back into her, nearly buckling her knees. Unable to think as that torrent flooded in on her, she managed 3 more steps before stumbling to a halt. She remembered everything, the making of every weave, where every injury had been received. All of her missteps, her frantic efforts to hold on to some outward semblance of serenity. "It is done," Marian intoned, clapping her hands together with a loud crack. "Let no one ever speak of what has passed here. It is for us to share in silence with she who experienced it. It is done." Again she clapped her hands loudly, the blue fringe of her shawl swinging. "Warain Damodred, you will spend tonight in prayer and contemplation of the burdens you will take up on the morrow when you don the shawl of an Aes Sedai. It is done." For a third time she clapped her hands together. Gathering her skirts, the mistress of novices started for the doors, but the rest of the sisters came quickly to Moiraine. All except Elida, she realized. Shawl wrapped around her as though she felt the coolness. Elida was leaving with Marian. "Will you accept healing, child?" Anaya asked. A hand taller than Moiraine, her plain features nearly overwhelmed agelessness and made her look more a farmer than an Aes Sedai, despite her finely cut blue woolens with their intricate embroidery on the sleeves. "I don't know why I ask. You're not in as bad a state as some I've seen, but bad enough."
"I passed?" she said in amazement.
If blushes counted as breaking calm, no one would ever reach the shawl, Anaya replied, adjusting her own with a laugh.
Light! They had seen everything. Of course they would have to.
But she remembered a stunningly handsome man who had snatched her up and begun kissing her quite thoroughly just as she started the 43rd weave, and her face reddened.
They had seen that!
"You really should heal the child before she falls over, Anaya," Varin said. Short and dreamy-eyed, she was quite plump in her fine russet wool and brown-fringed shawl. Moiraine liked Varin,
yet she felt a chill at the sight of her clothing in the brown sister's hands.
"I suppose I should at that," Anaya said, and clasping Moiraine's head between her hands, she channeled.
These injuries were far worse than the welts and bruises Elida had given, and this time Moiraine felt as though she were caked in ice rather than dunked in cold water. When it passed, though, all of the cuts and gouges and gashes were gone. The weariness remained, seeming even heavier than before, and she was starving. How long had she been down here? Her carefully learned sense of time seemed utterly scrambled. One touch at her pouch told her the book was still there, but she could do no more in front of the sisters. Besides, she very much wanted to be clothed once more. But there was a question she wanted answered. Her tests had not been simply a matter of chance, completely a product of the Turangrial. The continual assaults on her modesty left no doubts. "The last test was very cruel," she said, pausing with her dress ready to lift over her head, pausing to watch their faces.
"It is not to be spoken of, however cruel," Anaya said firmly. "Not ever to anyone."
But Yuan, a slim yellow, half-glanced toward the door, displeasure in her gray eyes. So, Marian had been no part of the test. Elida had tried to make her fail, and harder than anyone else, or the Arafelin sister would not have disapproved. So. The other three sisters went their own way, but Anaya and Verin escorted her back above ground, using a different route than she had come down by. When they left her, she went to the room where she and Swan had spent so many days copying names, and found two clerks doing the work, harassed-looking women who were none too pleased to be interrupted with questions about an accepted of whom they knew nothing.
Could it be?
Oh, Light!
Could it?
She hurried to the accepted's quarters, and was three times called down for it by sisters. She was still only accepted until tomorrow. She all but ran, and found Swan's room and her own both empty. Some of the name-taking excursions were ending earlier now, and it was well past midday, so she searched through the other rooms until she found Shiriam and Mirel sitting before the fire in Mirel's room, where the small rug had a ragged red fringe, and the washbasin and pitcher were blue.
"Marian came for Swan a little while ago," Mirel said excitedly, "for her test."
Did you pass?" Shiriam asked. "Yes," she replied, and felt a touch of sadness at the sudden withdrawal in their faces. They even stood, hands going to skirts, almost making to curtsy. A gulf had opened between them. She was still accepted until tomorrow, but friendship was at an end, until they also gained the shawl. They did not ask her to leave, yet neither did they ask her to stay, and they seemed relieved when she said she wanted to go to her room to wait alone for Swan's return. Once in her room, she examined the book in her belt pouch, but nothing indicated that it had been touched, no pages creased by someone reading carelessly, which did not mean no one had read. But then, no one would have known what they were looking at unless they knew what Moiraine and Swan did, and Tamra's searchers. She offered a silent prayer of thanks that none of them had been among the sisters testing her, so far as she knew. A serving woman, or perhaps a novice, had laid a fire on the hearth and placed a tray on her small table, and removing the crisp white cloth that covered it revealed a larger meal than she thought she had ever eaten in her life. Piled slices of roasted beef, turnips with a cream sauce, broad beans with crumbly white goat cheese, cabbage with pine nuts. There was a round loaf of crusty brown bread and a huge pot of tea. The tray must only just have been left because everything was still warm. The tower had a way of timing things to a nicety. Much too much food, yet she ate every shred, even the bread, the whole loaf. Her whole body yearned for sleep, but that would never do. If Swan failed, and survived failing, Light let her live at least. She would be brought back only long enough to gather her possessions and say her goodbyes. Moiraine refused to take the risk, so she curled up on her bed, but with a small leather-bound book. Hearts of Flame might be unsuitable for a novice, but it was one of her favorites, and Swan's. Now she stared at the first page for minutes before realizing she had not read a word. She got up to pace a while before taking up the book again, yawning, but she still could not manage to hold a sentence. Swan would come back. She would not be put out of the tower. But there were so many ways to misstep, so many ways to fail. No, Swan would pass. She had to. It would be unfair for Moiraine to reach the shawl and not Swan. She knew her friend would be a better Aes Sedai than she could ever manage. Throughout the afternoon, she heard the sounds of other accepted returning, some laughing, others complaining, all loudly. The noise always turned to stillness very quickly, though, as word spread that she had been tested and had passed, that she was in her room. Tomorrow she would be raised Aes Sedai, yet they behaved as though she already was, moving in a hush so as not to disturb her. The hour for supper came and passed. She actually thought she could eat a little something in spite of her huge and late dinner, but she did not go to the dining hall. For one thing, she doubted she could bear the stares of the others, or worse, their downcast gazes. For another, Swan might return while she was gone. She was on her bed, yawning and making yet another attempt at reading, when Swan walked in, her expression unreadable. "Did you," Moiraine began, and could not finish. "It was as easy as falling off a boat," Swan answered. "Into a school of silver pike. I almost swallowed my heart when I remembered this." She slapped her belt pouch, where she also carried her book of names. "But after that it went well." Her whole face suddenly turned bright red. She managed a smile through it. "We'll be raised together, Moiraine." Moiraine leaped to her feet, and laughing they danced hand in hand for joy. She ached to ask what had happened in Swan's test. That furious blush from Swan begged intriguing questions, but to be shared in silence, and only then with the women who had shared it with you. How long since they too had failed to share everything? Even here the shawl brought separations. "You must be starved," Moiraine said, stopping the dance. She was so tired she had begun to stagger, and Swan was not much steadier. "And there must be a tray waiting in your room." She indicated the one on her table. It might have been brought up to her on this special occasion, but she was expected to carry the dirty dishes down herself, and feel lucky if she did not have to wash them for waiting so long. "I could eat an ore, but there's better than food in my room." Swan grinned suddenly. "I got 6 mice from one of the grooms this morning."
"We are practically sisters," Moiraine protested. "We cannot put mice in someone's bed. Anyway, beyond improper, it would not be fair. Nearly everyone has been out for most of the day, and they must be as tired as you are."
"Practically sisters isn't the same as being, Moiraine. Think. It's our last chance. It really won't be proper once we have the shawl." Swan's grin faded to grimness. "And Elida hasn't been out of the tower that I know. Mice are a small repayment for those beatings, Moiraine. We owe her. We owe her." Moiraine drew breath. Without Elida, she might never have practiced trying to weave faster, and without that, she might well have failed. But she suspected her father had not been Elida's only special addition to her test. Too often her weaknesses had been laid bare by someone who knew them particularly well. The woman had tried to make her fail. "Only after you have eaten," she said. Chapter 11. Just Before Dawn. By the light of a single lamp and the low fire on her narrow hearth, Moiraine dressed herself carefully, making an effort to stifle her yawns. It needed effort. A night of contemplation meant a night of no sleep. Her eyes were grainy, her limbs leaden. Well, sleep would have been beyond her in any case, simply because of what lay ahead this morning. Oh, why had she not argued Swan out of that mad prank? It was a question she had asked herself often during the night, and as foolish this time as the first. She rarely won arguments with Swan. If only Swan were with her now. Contemplating the burdens and duties of an Aes Sedai turned inevitably to the task Moiraine meant to take up, and the scale of that search had loomed larger and larger as the night went on, until it reared before her like unscalable dragon mount itself. Company would have helped, but the ritual was explicit. Each must be alone when they came for her. Missteps now brought no penalties beyond embarrassment, and likely a reputation as flighty dunces that they might never shake off. Of course, they might already have achieved the reputation, yet it had seemed best to be beyond reproach as far as they could. Once dressed, she laid out her few belongings on the bed, but except for a change of shift and stockings, she left the remaining garments in the wardrobe. They would be washed and put away against a novice gaining the ring who could wear them. None among those currently in white would be able to wear those dresses without huge alterations, anyway, but no matter. The White Tower was patient. The little book was snug in her belt pouch, the safest place she could think of. She had just put her small rosewood box on the bed, containing the few pieces of jewelry she had brought with her to the tower, when a knock came at the door, 3 firm raps. She jumped at the noise, and her heart fluttered. Suddenly she was almost as nervous as before the test. It was very hard not to run to answer. Instead, she checked her hair carefully in the mirror on the washstand, used her hairbrush to tame a few strands that really did not need taming, laid the brush on the bed, and only then went to the door. 7 sisters awaited her in the night, 1 from each Aja, all wearing their vine-covered shawls over silks or fine woolens, their faces ageless masks. So the ritual required. Elida was the red, but Moiraine managed to meet the woman's stern gaze levelly, her features smooth. Well, as smooth as she could make them. Another hour or just a little more, and they would be equals, at least to some degree. Never again would Elida be able to make her quail. Without a word, she stepped outside, closing the door behind her for the last time, and wordlessly they formed a ring around her, escorting her along the dark gallery to Swan's door. Silence was required. Jiayne, a slim, copper-skinned Damani, knocked 3 times, the green fringe of her shawl swaying. Swan opened the door so quickly she must have been waiting on her toes for the 3rd knock. The ring of sisters parted to let her in, and her eyebrow twitched at the sight of Elida, but at least she did not grimace, the light be thanked. Moiraine clenched her jaw to suppress a yawn. She would finish without breaking the proprieties. With the soft brush of their slippers on floor tiles, they passed along corridors of the tower where nothing moved save themselves and the flames flickering atop the stand lamps. Moiraine was surprised not to see any servants. Much of their work was done in the hours before the sisters rose or after they retired for the night. In silence, they climbed down into the levels beneath the tower, along well-lighted passages, and past dark. The doors to the chamber where she and Swan had been tested stood open wide, but there in the corridor they all stopped, the ring of Aes Sedai breaking apart to form a line behind the 2 of them as they turned to face the gaping doorway.
"Who comes here?"
Tamra's voice demanded from within. "Moiraine Damodred," Moiraine answered clearly, and if her face remained smooth, her heart fluttered, with joy this time. Swan spoke her own name at the same instant, defiance touching her tone, if only lightly. She insisted that Elida would still find some way to rob them of the shawl, if she could. Their teachers had never brought up the matter of precedence. Perhaps they had never expected the 2 of them to march this far in complete lockstep, but Moiraine heard someone's breath catch behind her, and when Tamra spoke again, it was after a pause so slight that she might have imagined it.
"For what reason do you come?"
"To swear the 3 oaths and thereby claim the shawl of an Aes Sedai," they answered together. Breach of the proprieties or not, they intended to do everything together this morning, insofar as possible.
"By what right do you claim this burden?"
"By right of having made the passage, submitting myself to the will of the White Tower."
"Then enter if you dare, and bind yourself to the White Tower."
Hand in hand they entered, together, a smooth face and a steady tread, neither hurrying nor lagging back. The will of the tower awaited them in the flesh. Tamra, in pale brocaded blue with the Ammerlin's striped stole around her neck, stood framed by the oval Turangreal, its colors slowly shifting through silver and gold, blue and green, with Aeldra at her side in a darker shade of blue, holding a black velvet cushion in both hands. Along the circular wall stood the shawl-draped sitters in the hall of the tower, grouped by Aja, and in front of each three sitters, two more sisters of that Aja, shawled and each with another shawl folded over one arm. Expressionless eyes watched Swan and Moiraine cross the floor. The Turangreal presented the first problem to their plan. The tall oval was too narrow for both to pass through at once, not without squeezing together, and that hardly conformed to the required dignity. This was one argument Moiraine had won. Swan gave her a look. It seemed impossible those blue eyes could turn sharp without altering her smooth expression, yet they did, and gathering her skirts, stepped through with Moiraine following behind. Side by side they knelt in front of the Ammerlin seat. From the velvet cushion Aeldra held, Tamra took the oath rod, a smooth ivory-white cylinder a foot long and only slightly thicker than Moiraine's wrist. A Turangreal, the oath rod would bind them to the three oaths, and thus to the tower. For an instant Tamra hesitated, as though uncertain which of them to bind first, but only for an instant. Moiraine promptly raised her hands in front of her, palms upward, and Tamra placed the rod there. This was the price Swan had exacted, a favor to be granted, for Moiraine's yielding precedence through the oval. Needless to say, she had not revealed her favor until Moiraine accepted. She would become Aes Sedai first by minutes. It was so unfair. But there was no time for thinking of how she should have known Swan was up to something when she gave in so easily. The glow of Sidar surrounded Tamra, and she touched the oath rod with a thin flow of spirit. Moiraine closed her hands around the rod. It felt like glass, only somehow smoother. Under the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, I vow that I will speak no word that is not true. The oath settled on her, and suddenly the air seemed to press harder against her skin. Red is white, she thought. Up is down. She could still think a lie, but her tongue would not work to utter it now. Under the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, I vow that I will make no weapon for one man to kill another. The pressure grew abruptly. It felt as though she had been sewn into an invisible garment, much too tight, that molded her from the crown of her head to the soles of her feet. To her chagrin, sweat popped out on her forehead, yet she managed to keep her face calm. Under the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, I vow that I will never use the one power as a weapon except against Shadow Spawn, or in the last extreme of defending my life or that of my warder or another sister. That garment shrank to still greater snugness, and she breathed heavily through her nose, clamping her jaws to keep it from becoming a gasp. Invisible and utterly flexible, yet oh, so tight. This feeling that her flesh was being compressed would fade, but not entirely for a whole year. Light. She wondered how Elida had enjoyed taking that last oath, with its mention of warders. The three oaths remained unchanged, whatever Aja you intended to join. Thinking of that helped a little.
It is half done, the Ammerlin intoned, and the White Tower is graven on your bones.
But she did not complete the ceremony. Instead, she took the rod and placed it in Swan's hands. Moiraine fought down a smile. She could have kissed Tamra. There was no sweating or gasping from Swan. She rendered the oaths in a clear, strong voice, never so much as blinking as each settled on to her. No physical hardship could faze Swan, who had never wept until after Elida was gone, had never shed a tear until they left Marian's study. Swan had the heart of a lion.
"It is half done, and the White Tower is graven on your bones," Tamra said, replacing the oath rod on Aeldra's cushion. "Rise now, Aes Sedai, and choose your Aja, and all will be done that may be done under the light."
However much equanimity Swan had shown swearing the oaths, She moved no less stiffly than Moiraine as they rose and curtsied formally to Tamra, bending to kiss her great serpent ring. Together they walked toward the Blue Sisters, slowly, with as much grace as they could muster, and not holding hands. That would never have done, not now. Like any accepted, they had often discussed which Ajah they might enter, arguing merits and faults as though they knew more than the surface, yet for the last year or more, those discussions had been merely to prove a choice already made. The Blue sought to right wrongs, which was not always the same as seeking justice, like Greens and Greys. Seekers after causes, Varen had called Blues, and the capitals were there to be heard in her voice. Moiraine could not imagine belonging elsewhere. Swan was smiling, which she should not have done, but then so was she herself, she realized, and she could not make it go away. Once their direction became clear, the sisters from other Ajahs began making their courtesies to the Amyrlin and departing, first the yellows, then the greens, gliding from the chamber with their sitters leading the way in regal procession. The browns left, and then the whites. What set the order, Moiraine did not know, but once the reds were gone, the last, Tamra glided from the chamber after them. What passed here now was for the Blue alone. Aeldra remained to watch. The three remaining sitters gathered around as copper-skinned Lyanna, willowy and as tall as most men, bent to lay the blue-fringed shawl around Moiraine's shoulders, and Raffaella, slim, dark, and pretty, performed the same office for Swan. Neither had the ageless face yet, but they wore dignity like cloaks. The sitters were dignity incarnate. Stout Edith, with white hair spilling to her waist, kissed Swan lightly on both cheeks and then Moiraine, each time murmuring, "Welcome home, sister. We have waited long for you." Anne Lee, grave-faced and graying in green-slashed blue, and almost as many rings and necklaces as Gitara had worn, repeated the kisses and the words, and then Lilaine, whose solemn expression broke into a smile as she spoke. Lilaine became a great beauty when she smiled. "Welcome home, sister," Lyanna said, bending once more to kiss Moiraine. "We have waited long for you." Aeldra also kissed their cheeks and spoke words, then surprisingly added, "You each owe me a pie made with your own hands. It's customary among us for the sixth sister who gives you the welcome kiss." Moiraine blinked and exchanged glances with Swan. Was the ceremony done so abruptly? A pie? She doubted Aeldra would be able to eat hers. She had never cooked anything in her life. Edith clicked her tongue and adjusted her shawl along her arms. "Really, Aeldra," she said firmly. "Just because these two have chosen to step beyond the bounds in so many ways is no reason for you to forget your dignity. Now." Long blue silk fringe swung as she raised her hands. "I charge you, Lyanna Sheriff, escort Moiraine Domodred that the White Tower may see that a blue sister has come home. I charge you, Raffaella Sindal, escort Swan Sanche that the White Tower may see that a blue sister has come home." Gathering Aeldra, Edith led the other sitters from the chamber, but it seemed the rest of them were not entirely done. "Custom is a precious thing that should not be allowed to wither," Raffaella said, eyeing Swan and her each in turn. "Will you proceed to the Blue Ajah quarters, clad in the light as ancient custom required?" Swan clutched at her shawl as though she never meant to remove it, and Raffaella added hastily, "And in your shawl, of course, to show that you need no protection beyond the light and the shawl of an Aes Sedai." Moiraine realized she was clutching her own shawl in identical fashion and made her hands relax, stroking the silk softly with her fingers. The three oaths had made her Aes Sedai, yet she had not felt Aes Sedai until the shawl was put onto her shoulders. But if she was required to go out in public wearing nothing else, oh, light, now her face was turning hot. She had never seen an Aes Sedai blush. "Oh, do give over, Raffaella," Lyanna said with a quick reassuring smile shared between Moiraine and Swan. She had been accepted with them for a time, and by the warmth of that smile it seemed their friendship might be taking up where it had left off. A 1,000 years ago, women came to be raised clad in the white and left the same way. Everyone here would have been. But the only part of that custom left is keeping the hallways clear until you reach the Aja's quarters, she explained briskly. Liana did everything briskly. I doubt anyone but a few Browns even remembers the custom. Rafaela is half mad with trying to bring back dead customs. Don't deny it, Rafaela. Remember the apple blossoms? Even the Greens don't remember what battle that was supposed to commemorate. Strangely, though Rafaela had reached the shawl a year before Liana, she only sighed. Customs should not be forgotten, she said, but without any force. Liana shook her head. Come along. I know you must want your breakfast, but that has to wait on a few things, including this walk, which will not include all of the public corridors, she added, cocking an eyebrow at Rafaela. Nor will we stop at each Aja's quarters calling for them to come out and see a sister of the blue. Shaking her head, she herded them through the doors, channeling briefly to swing them shut. I've never been so embarrassed in my life. You should have been the one blushing, Rafaela. Varen told us she had such a sweet voice she should take up singing. One red came out to tell us to stop caterwauling and go away. And the greens. Some greens have a rough sense of humor. Whether or not Rafaela had blushed then, color tinged her cheeks faintly now. How rough had those greens' sense of humor been, Moiraine wondered. At least Rafaela's blushes made her stop worrying about her own. Of course, the sisters would present a different face to each other than they did to those who did not wear the shawl, which she did now. It made her feel inches taller, even if Liana did tower head and shoulders above her. The other woman had shortened her stride, yet Moiraine still had to trot to keep up as they climbed back up through the basements to tower corridors empty of life, save for them. The hallways were seldom crowded, but the absence of people made them seem cavernous. Imagining the tower completely empty became all too easy. It would be one day, if matters continued as they were. "Is the ceremony done with this walk?" she asked. "The blue Aja part, I mean. May we ask questions?" She supposed she should have asked that first, but she wanted the sound of voices to chase away ill thoughts. "Not completely done," Liana replied. "But you can ask whatever you like. Some questions, though, can't be answered till you've met the first selector, the head of our Aja." "You must never reveal that title," Rafaela put in quickly. Moiraine nodded, though she already knew that. Accepted were taught that every Aja had secrets, as Rafaela had to be aware. More than one sister had told Moiraine that she would have almost as much to learn once she gained the shawl as before. She intended to step very carefully until she learned more. "I have a question," Swan said with a frown. "Are there many customs like this pie? I can cook, but my eldest sister did all the baking."
"Oh, yes," Rafaela said happily, and she regaled them with arcane customs while they walked along the tower's first level, some as silly as wearing blue stockings when leaving Tar Valon, some as sensible as refraining from marriage. Aes Sedai did marry now and then, but Moiraine could not see how that could end other than poorly. The torrent of information continued as they climbed one of the spiraling hallways, only stopping when they reached the plain, polished doors that led into the blue quarters. "You can hear the others later," Rafaela said, shifting her shawl down to her arms. "Be sure to learn them all quickly. Some are enforced as strictly as tower law. I think they all should be, but at least some are."
"Give over, Rafaela," Liana said, and she and the dark sister each took a brass door handle and pushed one of the doors open. They had not channeled. Perhaps that was another custom. Riding would be uncomfortable for a few days, and she intended using the time until she could leave the city to memorize those customs, at least those that were enforced. She was not about to have the beginning of her search delayed by something as ridiculous as not wearing all blue on the first day of the month. Light. Surely they did not enforce that one. Safer to be sure, though. She and Swan stepped through the doorway and stopped in surprise. The blue was the second smallest Aja after the white, but every blue sister currently in Tar Valon was lining the main corridor, all save Aeldra formally wrapped in their shawls. Chapter 12. Entering Home. Anaya was the first to step forward and kiss their cheeks, saying, "Welcome home, sister. We have waited long for you. Aeldra told me how she stole my pies," she added, giving her shawl a twitch of irritation that was obvious pretense, betrayed by a laugh. It wasn't fair of her to take advantage of her position that way. "Or mine, perhaps, if I'd been a trifle quicker," Chiron said after giving the formal greeting. A beautiful woman and not overly tall, her smile belied the coolness of her steady blue eyes. "May we at least hope you two bake poorly? Aeldra likes pranks almost as much as you two, and it would be nice to see her repaid properly." Moiraine laughed and hugged Swan. She could not help it. She truly had come home. They had come home. The blue quarters held none of the flamboyance of the greens and yellows, though they were not so plain as the browns or the whites. The brightly colored winter wall hangings along the main corridor were scenes of spring gardens and fields of wildflowers, brooks running over stones and birds in flight. The stand lamps against the pale walls were gilded, but quite simple in decoration. Only the floor tiles, in every shade of blue from a pale morning sky to the deep violet of twilight, and laid in a wavy pattern, gave any hint of grandeur. Moving slowly along those waves, she and Swan received the welcome kiss 39 more times before reaching Edith and the other two sitters. "Rooms have been prepared for you," the round-faced sister told them, "along with proper clothing and some breakfast, but change and eat quickly. There are things I must tell you, things you must know before it is really safe for you to set foot outside our quarters, or even to walk within it, in truth, though most are tolerant of a new sister. Cabriana, will you show them the way?" A pale-eyed sister, light golden hair hanging almost to her waist, spread her blue-slashed skirts in a slight curtsy. Not all sisters taught classes by far, and Moiraine did not recognize her. There was a fierce directness in her gaze, suitable for a green, yet her tone was quite meek, as she said, "As you say, Edith," and to Swan and Moiraine almost as meekly, "Will you come with me, please?" It was very odd, that blend of fierceness and, well, docility seemed the closest description. "Is she the first selector?" Moiraine asked cautiously as soon as they were out of Edith's earshot. And of anyone else's, she hoped. The sisters who had gathered were dispersing by ones and twos, removing their shawls. "Oh, yes," Anaya said, joining them with Chiron. Cabriana had her mouth open to answer, but she closed it without a trace of protest at being overridden. "It's unusual for the first selector also to be a sitter," Anaya went on, "but unlike some, we blues like to make full use of ability." Folding her shawl and laying it across one arm, Chiron nodded. "Edith is perhaps the most capable blue in the last 100 years, but if she were a brown or a white, they'd let her potter off wherever she wanted." "Oh, yes," Cabriana said, making a tisking sound. "Some of the brown sitters have been disgraceful, for sitters at least, but browns always let their minds wander. In any case, you may rest assured that whatever talents you have, a use will be found for them." Disliking the sound of that, Moiraine exchanged a guarded glance with Swan. Well, neither of them had any special abilities. But what danger was Edith going to warn them about? A danger even here. She wanted to ask the three sisters escorting them down the hallway, but she was certain the information had to come from Edith, and in private. Otherwise, she would simply have told them then and there. Light! Their new home might have as many undercurrents as the Sun Palace. A definite time for caution, a time to listen and observe and say little. The apartments chosen for Swan and her were side by side, a little off the main corridor, each containing a spacious bedchamber, a large sitting room, a dressing room, and a study, with fireplaces of carved marble whose crackling fires had taken the chill from the air. The polished wall panels were bare, but patterned carpets, some fringed from half a dozen countries, lay on the blue-tiled floors. The furniture was disparate, too. Here a table inlaid with mother-of-pearl in a fashion used in Kyrian 100 years ago. There a chair with vine-carved legs from the light alone knew where,
and the lamps and mirrors in as many styles as there were lamps and mirrors, but nothing was chipped or cracked, and every piece of wood or metal had been polished till it shone softly. The belongings they had left laid out in the accepted's quarters had been brought up, and Moiraine's own brush and comb on the washstand, her blackwood lap desk on the writing table in the study, her jewelry box on a side table in the bedchamber already put her mark on her rooms.
"We thought you'd like to be close together," Anaya said when they finished up in Moiraine's sitting room.
Chiron and Cabriana stood flanking her on the scroll-worked carpet, and looking to her as often as at Swan or Moiraine as well. They talked among themselves with the ease of long friendship, yet Chiron and Cabriana clearly took their lead from Anaya. It was quite subtle, but obvious to eyes trained in the Sun Palace. Not that it meant anything. In any group there was always one who took the lead, but Moiraine filed it away. "You can choose other rooms if you wish," Chiron added. "We have all too many empty, though I fear some are as dusty as the worst of the basements." She was leaving Tarvalen soon, had spoken casually of some business she had in Tyr. Could she be one of Tamra's searchers? There was no way to know. Aes Sedai were always leaving the tower and others returning.
"If you want to change rooms, I can arrange for the cleaning," Cabriana said, gathering her skirts as if to see to it immediately. She sounded almost anxious. Why was she behaving so strangely? Plainly she was the low woman among the three, yet she acted the same way toward Swan and her, too.
"Thank you, no."
Fingering the lace edging a chair's cushion, she tried to say the rooms were very nice. The three sisters had seemed preparing everything, though the carpets and furnishings were a gift from the Aja. But her tongue refused to form the lie, so she settled for, "These are more than adequate." Every last cushion in the rooms had lace ruffles, and so did the coverlets on the beds and the pillowcases. Some of the ruffles seemed to have ruffles. The room would be much more than adequate once she got rid of all those frills. Swan had actually smiled at the lace on her bed as though she would enjoy sleeping in a sea of froth. Moiraine shuddered at the thought. She offered tea or hot spiced wine before realizing she had no idea how to procure either, but Anaya said they must be eager to change and have breakfast, with the other two nodding agreement, and they gathered their skirts together.
"Food can wait," Swan said as soon as the door closed behind the three sisters. "Edith first. Have you winkled out any hint of what she has to tell us? It sounds like your game of houses to me."
"Edith first, breakfast later," Moiraine agreed, though the smell of warm porridge and stewed apricots from the cloth-covered tray on a side table made her mouth water. "But I have no clue, Swan, none." Yet it was reminiscent of Desdemar.
Four dresses of fine blue wool, plain but well cut, were hanging in the dressing room, two of them with skirts divided for riding, and she changed into one with a full skirt and left the banded accepted's dress folded in the wicker laundry basket. The small notebook she transferred from the white belt pouch that would be taken away to the plain blue pouch she found in the capacious wardrobe. Even here, perhaps especially here, there seemed no safer place than on her own person. Unsurprisingly, the new dress fit perfectly. It was said the tower knew more of its initiates than their seamstresses and hairdressers combined. Not that she had had either in some time, of course, a lack she intended to remedy, the seamstress at least. She had grown accustomed to wearing her hair loose, but she would need more than four dresses before she left Tarvalen, and in better than wool. Silk was hardly cheap, but it did wear wonderfully. From her carved jewelry box she took her favorite piece, a cassiera. She had regretted not being able to wear that here, but even after 6 years her hands remembered how to weave the thin gold chain into her hair so the small sapphire hung in the middle of her forehead. Studying herself in a wall mirror with a scroll-worked wooden frame, she smiled. She might lack the ageless face yet, but now she looked the Lady Moiraine Damodred, and Lady Moiraine Damodred had navigated the Sun Palace, where hidden currents could pull you under even at 15 or 16.
Now she was ready to navigate the currents here. Settling her blue-fringed shawl on her shoulders, she went in search of Swan, and met her in the hall, wrapped in her own shawl and coming the other way. The first sister they saw, Natasya, a slim Saldaean with dark tilted eyes and high cheekbones, who was a lenient teacher, gave them directions to Edith's rooms with a twist of distaste on her full lips. Moiraine wondered whether Natasya had some dislike for Edith, which it surely would be odd for her to display openly, but Edith herself imitated the expression with near exactness as she showed them to tall cushioned chairs before her sitting room's broad fireplace, where flames danced. And then she stood warming her hands as though reluctant to speak. There was no offer of tea or wine or any sort of welcome. Swan fidgeted impatiently on the edge of her chair, but Moiraine schooled herself to stillness. With difficulty, but she did it. The tightness of the three oaths was particularly harsh, sitting. Be quiet, listen, and observe. Edith's sitting room was larger than theirs, with a cornice carved in rolling waves and two tapestries of flowers and brightly colored birds on the walls, though her stand lamps were as plain. The massive furnishings were of dark wood inlaid with ivory and turquoise, except for one delicate little table that appeared to be carved ivory or bone. However long Edith had occupied these rooms, she had added few personal touches here. Just a tall vase of glistening yellow seafolk porcelain, a wide bowl of hammered silver, and a pair of crystal figures, a man and a woman each reaching a hand toward the other, on the mantel above the fireplace. All of which told her nothing except that the white-haired sister had good taste and restraint. Be silent, listen, and observe. Squirming on her seat cushion, Swan appeared about to stand when Edith finally turned to face them. Folding her arms beneath her breasts, she took a deep breath. For 6 years you have been taught that the second greatest rudeness is to speak directly of someone's strength in the One Power. Her mouth twisted again briefly. In truth, I find it difficult to do so now, necessary though it is. For 6 years you have been strongly discouraged from thinking of your own strength in the power or anyone else's. Now you must learn to compare your strength to that of every sister you meet. In time, it will become second nature, and you will do it without thought. But you must be very careful until you reach that point. If another sister stands higher than you in the power, whatever her Ajah, you must defer to her. The higher she stands above you, the greater your deference. Failure in that is the third greatest rudeness, and third only by a hair. The most common reason for new sisters to be given penance is a misstep of that sort, and since the penance is set by the offended sister, it is seldom light. A month or two of labor or deprivation is the least you can expect. Mortification of the spirit and mortification of the flesh are not unheard of. Moiraine nodded slowly. Of course. That explained Elida's deference to Malin, and Rafaela yielding to Liana, and Cabriana. Cabriana was not very strong at all. That thought came very hard. When the White Tower wanted to strongly discourage something, it was well and truly discouraged. Light. The Tower rooted something out of you, then made you use that very thing to determine precedence. What a tangle. At least she and Swan were near identical in strength and likely would be as they gained their full potential. They had moved in lockstep so far. It would have seemed unnatural if Swan had been forced to defer to her. Do we have to obey them? Swan asked, finally giving in and standing, and Edith sighed heavily. I thought I was quite clear, Swan. The higher she stands above you, the greater your deference. I truly dislike talking about this, so please don't make me repeat myself. It works the other way around as well, of course, but remember that it doesn't apply if your Ajah or the Tower has set someone above you. If you're attached to an embassy, for example, you obey the Tower's emissary as you would me, if she was barely allowed to test for accepted. Now, do you have that clear in your heads? Good, because I myself feel an urgent need to clean my teeth. And she hustled them from her rooms, as if she really did intend to rush for the salt and soda. I was scared half out of my wits, Swan said once they were back in the corridor. But that wasn't so bad. I thought we'd have to start at the bottom, but we're not so far from the top already. In another 5 years, we'll be close. Whether or not they thought about it, everyone knew when they would reach their full strength. The length of time could vary considerably from woman to woman, but it was always a smooth climb in a straight line.
I was frightened, too, Moraine said with a sigh. But it is not as simple as you make it sound. At what point does deference become obedience?
Even if she did not call it so, that is what she meant. We must observe the other sisters closely, and until we know for certain, we must err on the side of prudence. A month from now, I mean to be leagues from Tarvalen, not sweating on a farm across the river.
Swan snorted.
So we step carefully. What else have we been doing for 6 years? But it still could be worse. What say I bring my tray to your rooms and we breakfast together?
Before they reached their rooms, however, another Aes Sedai intercepted them. A tall, square-faced woman in sky-blue silk, with her steel-gray hair and a multitude of blue-beaded braids that hung to her waist. Moiraine had been certain that every blue in the tower had been at the welcome, but she did not recall seeing this sister ever before. She made herself aware of the woman's ability, her strength, and realized that it was nearly as great as her own and Swan's would be eventually. Surely more than simple deference was required here. Should she curtsy? She settled for waiting politely with her hands folded at her waist.
"I am Satalia Dalarm,"
the sister said in a strong Tarabonner accent, eyeing her up and down.
"By your description, the pretty little porcelain doll, you are Moiraine."
Moiraine stiffened. "A pretty little porcelain doll?" It was all she could do to keep her face smooth, to keep her hands from clutching her shawl in fists. The thought of that farm helped. But Satalia's attention had already left her.
"Which makes you Swan, no? I'm told you are a great solver of puzzles. What do you make of this little puzzle?" she said, thrusting a thin stack of pages at Swan.
Swan frowned as she read, and so did Moiraine, reading past her friend's shoulder. Swan riffled through the pages too quickly for her to catch everything, but it seemed to be nothing but the names of playing cards, in no particular order she could see. The ruler of cups was followed by the lord of winds, the ruler of flames by the lady of rods, but then it was the five of coins followed by the four of cups. A puzzle? It was nonsense.
"I'm not certain," Swan said finally, handing the pages back, which settled it. If the thing were a puzzle, she would have seen the solution.
"Oh?"
That word held a world of disappointment, but after a moment Satalia went on, the beads in her braids rattling softly as she tilted her head thoughtfully.
"You don't say you do not know, so you have the glimmer of something. Of what are you uncertain?"
"There's a game I've read about," Swan said slowly, "a game wealthy women play with cards called a raise. You have to put the cards in descending order in one of a set of patterns, but only certain suits can be played on others. I think someone wrote down each card as it was played in a winning game."
Satalia arched one eyebrow.
"You have only read of the game?"
"Fishermen's daughters can't afford playing cards," Swan replied dryly, and Satalia's eyes took on a dangerous look. For a moment, Moiraine thought a penance hovered. But all the Tarabonner sister said was,
"I'll wager Moiraine has played the arrays, yet I suspect she would have called it just the nonsensical list of playing cards or some such. Most would. But you, who have only read of the game, deduced the correct answer. Come with me. I have some more puzzles I wish to test you on."
"I haven't had my breakfast yet," Swan protested.
"You can eat later. Come."
Obviously, Satalia thought more than mere deference was due. Watching a reluctant Swan follow Satalia up the corridor, Moiraine let herself glare at the woman's back. Surely that behavior at least skirted rudeness. Apparently there were gradations. Well, nuance was everything in the Sun Palace, too. They would only have to bear it a short time, though. Inside the week they would be gone, and she, for one, did not intend to return until she was at her full strength. Except to let Tamra know where the boy child was, of course.
Actually, being the ones to find him would be wonderful. Her own breakfast porridge still held enough warmth to be edible, and she settled gingerly onto a plump cushioned chair at the table. But before she could take a second bite, Anaya walked in. Anaya was nearly as strong in the power as Satalia, so she set down her silver spoon and stood.
"I tell you to sit down and eat," the motherly woman said. "But Tamra sent a novice to fetch you. I told the child I'd carry her message because I wanted to offer you healing. It can help with the tightness of the oaths in some cases."
Moiraine reddened. Of course everyone knew by now. Light.
"Thank you,"
she said, both for the healing. The tightness did not loosen by a hair, but it was much more comfortable after. And for the clue. If she did not have to stand for Anaya, she surely did not have to obey her. Unless Anaya was simply being courteous, of course. She very nearly sighed. More observation was in order before she reached any conclusions. Leaving the blue quarters with her shawl wrapped firmly around her shoulders, she did not mean to go without that just yet. For one thing, it helped with the chill. She wondered what Tamra wanted with her. Only one possibility came to mind. Now that she and Swan were full sisters, Tamra might mean to put them among her searchers. After all, they already knew. Nothing else made sense. Her steps quickened eagerly.
"But I don't want a job," Swan protested, her belly rumbling with hunger yet again.
She felt wrung out after hours in Satalia's rooms, so full of books and stacked boxes of papers that they seemed to belong to a brown. And the woman seemed never to have heard of a chair cushion. Her chairs were hard as stone.
"Don't be ridiculous," the gray-haired sister said dismissively, crossing her legs.
She tossed the last pages she had given Swan carelessly onto a writing table already littered six deep with others.
"You didn't do too badly for a beginner. I have need of you, and that is that. I expect you here at second rise tomorrow morning. Now go get something to eat. Your eyes should eye now. You cannot go around sounding like the leaky drain pipe."
There was no point in protesting again. The bloody woman had already made it clear that two protests in succession came dangerously close to rudeness in her book. Bloody, bloody woman! She let nothing of anger touch her face, a lesson learned long before Tar Valon. On the fishing docks, displaying anger or fear, either one could lead to trouble. Sometimes it could lead to a knife in your back.
"As you say, Satalia," she muttered, earning yet another raised eyebrow, and just managed not to stalk out of the woman's apartments. Outside she did stalk, and the Dark One take anyone who did not like it. Burn her! Why had she been fool enough to let the woman goad her?
Moiraine had counseled caution, and instead she had tried to wipe the doubt from bloody Satalia's bloody voice by thinking like Moiraine. Unskilled hands on the tiller put the boat aground when they did not capsize it. Her unskilled steering meant she would not be leaving the tower any time soon. Not for years, until she was strong enough to tell Satalia what she could do with her